Speaking on this program is Bill Boyd.
I want to talk to you about how Christianity is a taught religion. Now that might seem so basic and so fundamental, and I hope to those of us that have been members of the Churches of Christ for a long time will almost look at that and say, well, why would you even have a lesson on that? But I'm going to show you why that's such a fundamental and important concept. Look how Jesus began in Matthew chapter 5, verses 1 and 2 on the Sermon on the Mount. Seeing the multitudes, He went up into a mountain. And when He was set, His disciples came to Him, and He opened His mouth and taught them. He was teaching them. He opened His mouth. And why would it say He opened His mouth? Well, use your imagination and put yourself back in that. Now, they're not inside a nice building with this, with the speaker system and everything. And He couldn't just whisper, you know, to them into the mic and explain things. They're outside, and they're on a mountain, and there's multitudes. And He's got to be able to make His voice heard. So He opens His mouth. That lets the words come out with a volume that they can hear. And teaches them, blessed are the poor in spirit, He would preach. And so put yourself in that crowd and hear Him. He wasn't a shouting preacher, but He'd raise those volumes so those words could come through distinctively outside like that. And He's teaching them. Christianity is a taught religion. It says that Jesus went about all Galilee teaching in their synagogues and preaching the gospel of the kingdom. And I want to focus on this verse in our text this morning where it said, it is written in the prophets, they shall all be taught of God. Every man therefore that hath heard and hath learned cometh unto Him. How does God draw all men to Jesus? Well, He raises Him up, but then they are taught about that. They hear about that. They learn about that. And that draws men to Him. Jesus is a teacher. And it is written in the prophets. In Isaiah 2, verses 2 through 4, it shall come to pass in the last days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established in the top of the mountain. In the prophetic language, mountain means government. The kingdom of heaven, that government, that kingdom of heaven will be established above all the governments of men and the tops of the mountains. And it says that they be exalted above the hills, all nations shall flow into it, and many people shall go and say, come ye blessed of the Lord into the house of the God of Jacob. And He will teach us of His ways. See how it was written in the prophets? It says, and we will walk in His paths, for out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. He returns to this in Isaiah 11, verse 9. They shall not hurt or destroy in all my holy mountain, for the earth shall be filled with the knowledge of the Lord. As the waters cover the sea. What's going to make the difference in the Lord's government, in the Lord's mountain? It's going to be what people know now because they've been taught. It says in Isaiah 54 and verse 13, all thy children shall be taught of the Lord, and great shall be the peace of thy children. The prophet said we were going to be taught. Jeremiah verses 31 through 34. Jeremiah the prophet, talking about that new covenant, says, behold, the days come, saith the Lord, I'll make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah. Not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt. But this shall be the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel. After those days, saith the Lord, I'll put my law in their inward parts and write it in their hearts. And I will be their God, and they shall be my people. And they shall teach no more every man his neighbor, saying, know the Lord, for they'll all know me. From the least of them to the greatest of them, saith the Lord. For I will forgive their iniquity, and I'll remember their sin no more. Well, why won't you teach every man your neighbor and your brother? What's that talking about? You See, you had to be born into the Jewish kingdom. And then after being in that kingdom, born of one of the Jews, is one under that old covenant, after being born in it, you were taught about what you were born into. Not in the new covenant. Under the new covenant, you're taught first. And having been taught, then you come under that new covenant. And so you don't have to teach it like you do your children, bringing them up that way. You're going to be taught first. And so that's what that's talking about. It's the importance of teaching under that new covenant. And we see that in the New Testament, Philippians 4, verse 9. Those things which you have both learned and received and heard and seen in me do, and the God of peace shall be with you. And 2 Timothy 3:14, continue thou in the things which thou hast learned. Romans 16:17, I beseech you, brethren, mark them which cause division and offenses contrary to the doctrine which ye have learned. Now, how do you know about Christianity? How do you know right from wrong? How do you know what's true and false? Well, you learn this. You're taught this. And here's why that's important. Christianity is not an inherited religion. Now, under the old covenant, you inherited your religion. You inherited it from your parents. You were children of Abraham, and by birth you came under this old covenant, not under Christianity. John the Baptist was teaching in Matthew 3, verses 7 through 9. When he saw many of the Pharisees and Sadducees come to his baptism, he said unto them, O generation of vipers, who hath warned you to flee from the wrath to come? Bring forth fruits, therefore, meet for repentance, and think not to say within yourselves, we have Abraham to our father. For I say unto you, God is able of these stones to raise up children unto Abraham. You're not going to get into the kingdom of heaven because your Abraham physically was your father or because your parents were members of the church. You're not born into it with a physical birth. It's a new birth that's required. And so it's not inherited. It's not bestowed. Now there's parents that with all good intentions will have their children christened or baptize their children, besprinkling them, and bestow upon them the religion that they grew up with. You don't read about anyone in the New Testament that came to Christ because it was bestowed on them. In fact, we read just the opposite. Mark 16:16 said, he that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. It's not little infants. They don't have capacity to be taught and to hear and to receive and to learn and believe. Hebrews 11:6, without faith it's impossible to please God. For he that cometh unto God must believe that he is, and that he's a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. You, for all the good intentions and as much as you want those little children you hold in your hands to be members of God's church, you can't bestow that upon them. You raise them up and you teach them. And they learn. And they obey from the heart on their own. But you can't force people to really become a member of the church. You can impose communism on people. But Christianity's not like that. The Roman government could impose themselves on people. Christianity's not like that. You've got to be willing. Now, someone might make you say you're a Christian by holding a gun to your head, but you're not really a Christian because of that. Whosoever will, let him come and take of the water of life freely. You can't buy yourself into Christianity. There are some privileges you can get by purchase. And you could purchase Roman citizenship. When Paul was preaching, it says, they bound him with thongs. Paul said to the centurion that stood by, is it lawful for you to scourge a man that is a Roman and uncondemned? When the centurion heard that, he went and told the chief captain, saying, take heed what thou doest, for this man is a Roman. Then the chief captain came and said to him, tell me, art thou a Roman? He said, yea. And the chief captain answered, with a great sum I obtained this freedom. Paul said, well, I was freeborn. Now, Paul, by nature of his birth, became a Roman citizen. And this chief captain, because he had made this big purchase to someone that had the ability to grant him Roman citizenship, he bought that privilege, that freedom of being a Roman citizen. But you can't buy yourself into the kingdom of heaven. Just like you can't be born physically into it, you can't purchase it. And Paul says, or Peter says in 1 Peter 1:18-19, that you are not redeemed with corruptible things like unto silver and gold. It says, but with the precious blood of Christ as of a lamb without blemish and without spot. There are some positions and privileges that you can purchase. But you can't buy yourself into Christianity. You can't earn it. It can't be so good that the Lord's just going to be obligated to let you in. It's not like earning a Boy Scout badge. You know, you can earn your badges in Scouts, and you can become an Eagle Scout. And I'm proud of Eagle Scouts. They earn that. They have merit badges. And it's not an easy thing to do. But something greater than being an Eagle Scout is to be a Christian. And you can't earn it. Every now and then someone says, I don't think I'm good enough to be a Christian. Well, they are right. And none of us are. Because we don't earn it. By grace are you saved through faith, and that not of yourselves. It is a gift of God. Not of works, lest any man should boast. That doesn't mean there are things that we don't need to obey to become a Christian. There obviously are. It's His gift. And so you can't earn it. And it's not got. You never read in the Bible where someone got religion. Christianity doesn't get you either. It's not God, and it doesn't get you. If there was ever a man in the Bible that would be able to say that he got religion, well, then that would be Saul of Tarsus, wouldn't it? And what happened to him? And let's read what happened to him. As he journeyed, he came near Damascus. And suddenly there shined round about him a light from heaven, and he fell to the earth and heard a voice saying unto him, Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? And he said, Who art thou, Lord? And the Lord said, I'm Jesus whom thou persecutest. It is hard for thee to kick against the pricks. And he, trembling and astonished, said, Lord, what wilt thou have me to do? And the Lord said unto him, Arise and go into the city, and it shall be told thee what thou must do. Isn't it interesting that the Lord Himself didn't even tell him? Now, I guess you could say in this slang that we use, it looks like Paul got religion when he saw the light. But that's not what happened. Paul was a miserable person. In fact, he was blind, and he wouldn't eat, and he was in misery until he found out what he was supposed to do. We read about Paul telling about this in Acts 22 in verse 11. He said, When I could not see for the glory of that light, being led by the hand of them that were with me, I came into Damascus. And one Ananias, a devout man according to the law, having a good report of the Jews which dwelt there, came unto me and stood and said, Brother Saul, receive thy sight. In the same hour I looked upon him. And he said, The God of our fathers hath chosen thee, that thou shouldest know his will, and see that just one, and shouldest hear the voice of his mouth. For thou shalt be witnesses unto all men of what thou hast seen and heard. And now why tarriest thou? Arise and be baptized. And wash away thy sins, calling on the name of the Lord. Ananias came and taught him what to do. And Paul responded to the teaching. You want to be a Christian? Well, here's how it works. You're taught. And you hear. And you learn. And you receive. and you believe, and you obey, and then you live it. We want you to be a Christian. To believe, repent, confess His name before men, and be baptized into Christ, and then live that life as a Christian. He wants us to obey from the heart that form of doctrine which was delivered us.